Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba the Bloom, episode 93. We're going to do our top 20 starting pitching rankings, going head-to-head, toe-to-toe, whatever you want to call it. My stomach against Ryan's, I don't know, but we're just going to do this. And we're going to talk Holy Yamamoto in a minute as well, because that just happened about too soon. But before we get there, you can find me on Twitter at BDN, podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing?
Good, good. Better than you. The Yamamoto news broke about 5 minutes before, maybe 10 minutes before we just hit record. So we'll talk about that in a sec. Really, really enjoyed the feedback. We heard back from a lot of you folks out there about the draft and hold episode. So thanks for that. I even had a few people, more than a few people, reach out. I showed the kind of the draft and hold tracking spreadsheet that I use, had a few people reach out asking for to grab a copy of that. And I'm happy, absolutely happy to do so. I want to help help you guys, especially if you're new to the format and that sort of thing. So happy to give that to you guys. Just hit me up. The only thing we'd ask is in return, just a quick rate and review of the podcast. It really does help. We try not to shill every single episode, but if you want a copy of the spreadsheet, absolutely, just leave a 5-star review and a written review if possible on Apple. Helps the show a ton, and then helps you out as well. So but again, yeah, really appreciate the feedback we got from a bunch of you guys on the draft and hold episode. Hopefully we see you guys in a draft champions league near you soon.
Yep. It was awesome to see. So I hope you guys, it seems like you guys enjoyed it. So that is great. We'll have some more stuff like that to come besides our normal positional stuff and bloom boards and all the others as well. But let's not beat around the bush anymore, because the Dodgers aren't
beating
around.
Let's cut straight to the heart. Straight to Bubba's heart.
Dodgers aren't beating around the bank. That's for darn sure. Given we don't know how much of the millions of dollars is deferred in this contract. But yeah, Yamamoto is a Los Angeles Dodger, 12 years, over $300 million. He'll be 37 when the contract's over. So that's just a minor detail there. Him and Ohtani can grow old together. But, 25-year-old Yamamoto joins Glasnow and Ohtani in the rotation this year with Bobby Miller. If you didn't think I hated the Dodgers already. Yeah, good stuff. And it's just like I'm just kind of numb to it now. Just because I'm still expecting him to go sign, you know, like, or go trade for Aaron Judge or something, because nothing surprises me anymore. Like, they'll just do something stupid. They're not going to do Aaron Judge, obviously, fictitiously speaking, but nothing surprises me with the Dodgers anymore. It's just ridiculous. But they haven't really won a World Series since 1988, so it's kind of funny.
One of my favorite sayings, it sounds weird, but like typically whoever wins the offseason doesn't win the World Series. The Dodgers have absolutely won the offseason. They've been the best team in baseball, at least a top two team in baseball.
Regular season team.
Exactly. The last I don't know, 5+ years in the regular season. Playoff baseball, we mentioned this before, it is basically a coin flip. And to win the World Series, you have to win, I don't know how many series are now, three or four, depending if you have a bye, three or four coin flips in a row to win the World Series. So, yes, it makes the mighty mightier. We'll talk about what it means for Yamamoto when we get to our top 20. We both, before the show, put Yamamoto in. I don't know where. At least I know where I put him. I don't know where you put him, but we threw him in our top 20 at the last minute. I did not have him in because it was kind of landing spot dependent.
Yeah,
but I think he is in now. It's interesting. I did look because I considered Yamamoto in the top 20, but I looked at, what do we have to go off? I just looked at the projections. Steamer has Yamamoto projected for a 3.84 ERA, and in the forecaster we have Yamamoto projected for a 3.48 ERA, 1.17 WHIP, and a 25% strikeout rate. Like, not top 20 material, but Dodgers helps, yep. And he makes it in for me now.
15+ wins coming his direction now.
Exactly.
Changes a lot of things in the Yamamoto world.
Yep.
Also, something that's not discussed much because you don't like to use these people's names very often. I'm guessing this means Julio Urias ain't coming back anytime soon. because that thing's kind of been hush-hushed for a while. Like, the latest we saw is the investigation was over. Yeah. And it's the second time. Like, I hope he doesn't come back. I said that the second he got busted for it. But the fact, like, the Dodgers would have been aggressive regardless, but the fact they were this aggressive, I think, to get three, like, ace starting pitchers speaks, and for long-term deals, kind of speaks to the fact that, hey, we're going to have this rotation for a little while. So just a little extra thing on top there, because, like, we're in a DC right now in, like, round 47 or 48, and he's still out there. Like, no one has drafted him yet. Yeah. So I just want to throw that out there. Probably a smart move at this point.
And I guess, like, Bobby Miller's the fourth,
which is insane.
Maybe Emmett Sheehan, or.
Well, you could rotate the young pitchers now. They have innings issues. Stone's, you could have Ryan Yarbrough back there for all we know.
My man. Yeah. I'm a post ADP 500 team.
Yep. It's just Dodgers good at Dodgers. I'm going to root for the guys I like, but I'm going to hope they end with an L most nights. That's all I care about. It is kind of funny watching the Dodgers on the left coast spend all this money. You have the Braves on the east coast there, like, getting all these trades just to, like, clear up roster spots. And I think everyone thinks they're going to be spending money, but A, they've already signed everybody for so cheap. They've
already locked everyone up. Yep.
It's like two different philosophies on just world domination on the National League. It's pretty
good point. Didn't really think about that, but yeah, that makes sense.
Two different ways to, like they say, there's lots of ways, you know, make the sausage and stuff like that. Well, they're proving it in baseball terms right now. Pretty interesting stuff. But yeah, we both moved Yamamoto in. We'll talk about that. Before we get into our top 20, it was a fun kind of exercise last year because Ryan, he could have seen mine on my Substack, and I've changed them a bit since that got published a few weeks ago. But I have not seen his at all, 100%. He said he has not seen mine. So going into this, what were some of your thoughts when you finished making your top 20? Because I think we share a similar thought for one thing.
So, yeah, I mean, this is what I did last year, and this is what I generally do every year. For starting pitchers, I do like to go through every single starting pitcher and do projections myself manually. I lean on projection systems on the hitting side. I feel like projection systems are very good about accounting for regression and capturing at least per plate appearance skills for hitters. I don't think I can beat that. I may not be able to beat it on the pitcher side. I just feel like, and I've made this point a few times throughout the show, previous shows, but, like, I feel like projection systems in general can be slow to adapt to things like pitch mix changes, velocity changes, that sort of thing. Pitchers can adapt and change themselves very quickly. I think quicker than a projection system might be able to project that's using like a three-year weighted average. So I basically look through every starting pitcher. I look at what they did last year. I look up their forecaster blurb. It's the first thing I do. I look up the underlying skills that we have in the forecaster, look to see if there were any pitch mix changes or if any kind of skill changes. And I go through and I project an innings total, ERA, whip, strikeout, and wins. I project wins as well. And the rankings kind of, that sorts itself out. So that's how I do it. And how, whatever the number comes out to, that's where they're ranked in my, I don't want to say my system, but in my process. So yep. It's very manual, but it's also, I'd say, very methodical. I'm not like pitting one pitcher against another. I'm just doing their projection in a vacuum, whatever it comes out to, that's where they're at.
Seems so simple, folks. Seems so simple.
It's time.
I know it does. It does. I mean, sarcastic, very sarcastic there, but definitely.
I know you're a little on tilt tonight. I if you get a little snarky,
that just my whole head stuffed up from some sinus deal. It's just it's a great night. Great night for the Dodgers to do some stuff. This is good. But I'm a little different. Of course, we talked about this many times. Notepads out, all kinds of stuff like that, and I use projections, I use ADP, I use finishing spots from last year, and then I just kind of, it's not biases as much as, I'll decide the deciding factors, let's put it that way. I don't just put it into a spreadsheet. So, And that's where I wanted to go with this, is something we talked about kind of beforehand. There are so many pitchers, like even list earlier today, kind of altering things a bit. You could argue for X amount of guys to have the same ranking, because there's really, once you get to a certain spot, even in the top 20, there's a lot of similarities, and it's kind of, what do you want? Do you want strikeouts? Do you want a better, you know, ERA whip? Do you want maybe more wins? What are you looking for? And that's a question you usually have later in drafts, and you could actually start doing that earlier in drafts this year. So it's a bit different, but that's the landscape we have.
Yep, absolutely. And there's a big difference. There can be, like, I think the gap, well, I won't name names yet, but I think there are major gaps. There are certain pitchers, like, from rank like 7 through, I don't know, 14, 13, almost interchangeable. Whereas like 6 to 7, I think there's a gap. So that's the inherent like issue with just straight up rankings. We'll try, and at least I'll try, and on my side, try and kind of let you all know where I think there's a big tier drop off and where some guys are interchangeable in terms of a ranking. As always, context is needed whenever you're throwing out a list of rankings, as you know, Bubba, as you've been posting them on your Substack at each position this draft season. It's fun.
People like don't even read the context in it and start asking questions. Like, can you just read like the 3 brief paragraphs above it? And then I get the, oh, that's right. Okay. Gotcha. Cool. Gotcha.
Yeah. That's why we're talking it out tonight.
Yep. This is why I like the podcast, because you can talk these things out. It's so much easier than just throwing it out there to the world to digest themselves. So let's get at it. Let's have some fun. Ryan, who is your number one fantasy starting pitcher for 20? Oh, you got like a spreadsheet.
Look at this. Look at this. Now we'll do a little live for the YouTubers and the live stream folks. We will do a little, you know, everything's got to be a board. Everything's got to be a board in my world. So we'll do a little live tracking of who our top 20 is.
Well, who's your number one? I'm curious to see here, because I think we're on the same page.
It's Spencer Strider. For me, it's not close at all. I think the gap between Strider and number two is considerable. I think the question, the question's not who's your number one starter. It's like, how early do you take Spencer Strider? Because on draft day, you're comparing him to like a Freddie Freeman, Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis, like that type of hitter. You're going to go that route, or are you going to go Spencer Strider? I think that's kind of the key question you need to, think about. But the separation that I have from Strider, mainly in strikeouts, but also in wins in Atlanta, the durability questions that we had entering 2023, I think were answered pretty firmly by Strider, by his performance last year. And there's really, for a starting pitcher, this can all go wrong at some point, but I don't see how Spencer Strider is not the number one pitcher.
Yeah, he's my number one as well. We talked about it after Tuesday's show, that that'd be one of my adjustments I would make. The more I've done drafting, the more I've looked into things, that strikeout gap is tremendous. When I first made my rankings, I had Cole first, I'll be honest, but that was more of a kind of, I think Cole's potentially was safer, but because the way Strider finished 2023 was a bit concerning, where that could just be getting to those innings, which now he's gotten to, type thing. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But what he did for, like, let's say 2/3 of the season was next level Pedro Martinez type stuff. And that's a clear number one in my book.
You willing to go top 10 pick for Strider?
I have already in a draft, yes. I think it was a Gladiator, maybe I took.
Probably him. Probably in one that we're in together.
Yeah, I've taken him first round for sure.
Yeah. Yep. All right. My number two is Gerrit Cole, with hesitation, but it is still Gerrit Cole. It's interesting for Gerrit Cole coming off of his first Cy Young, coming off of 200-plus innings for the second year in a row, coming off 220-plus strikeouts in each of the last 4 full seasons. And again, he is my number two pitcher. Some chinks in the armor, man. The swinging strike dropped from 15% last year down to 12.5%. He lost a full mile an hour on the fastball. The K rate was down 5 points. The 2.63 ERA that Cole posted on the surface, HQ had a 3.60 expected ERA. I don't think this is the Gerrit Cole that we've seen the last couple years, but I do think the volume that he gives you, and he's still a really good pitcher, and the track record, like, this is just a horse. And despite the fact that I don't think this is Pete Cole, I still think a non-Pete Cole is good enough for second overall.
Yep, Gerrit Cole's my number two as well. The biggest factor you hit on it is the just the workhorse ability, back-to-back 200 inning seasons. He's gone 200 or more in basically five of his last six full seasons, six of his last eight. That's pretty impressive. 180 or more in six straight. Like, the dude's just a beast out there. It'd be nice to see the strikeouts come back. But at the same time, he's on a Yankees team that should be better this year, you'd hope, which could help in the win department. Ratio should still be pretty good when it comes to Gerrit Cole. The other caveat, if you want to play devil's advocate, which someone brought up to me before, he's going to be 34, so he's starting to slowly get older. But how old is he? That's the question. Like, is that too old in pitching terms or not? The way he pitches, he can be like a Nolan Ryan, Charlie Morton type, but the way he throws and just kind of go forever the pitching wise. So I think he's still my number two, just for that workhorse mentality and the ability. Like, if he somehow ticks that strikeout rate back up, he's going to be well worth every potential first round pick you get.
Yep. Agreed. I don't think that will happen, but I agree.
Yeah. I'm curious who your third is, because I think we're on the same one here, and I could understand the argument to have him second.
Zach Wheeler.
Yep.
You got Wheeler third.
Yeah, we'll start differentiating pretty soon, folks. The top like couple are pretty obvious, and then it gets real murky.
Zach Wheeler kind of switched things up in 2023, introduced a sweeper that got a ton of whiffs, was actually his highest whiff pitch, and was a great complement to a four-seam fastball that also missed a ton of bats. Zach Wheeler also getting up there like Cole. He's, I think, 1 year older than Gerrit Cole. But look at the last 3 years of what Zach Wheeler has done. Pitched even better in the second half of 2023. I think the combination of skill and volume and on a good team makes Wheeler a fine pick at three, even two, if I could see it.
That's what I say. I almost thought you were going to go at two with him. To me, he's our Woodruff this year. Like, he's the guy where we could see taking the big jump that we were all in on last year. Wheeler is that good. He's been a focus of mine in a lot of drafts. If I'm in the back end of drafts, it's a decision I've had to make. Do I want to get Wheeler, or do I want to not get a pitcher in the first two rounds type thing? That's a decision. So I think Wheeler is that good. I think Wheeler could overtake Cole if he brings it again this season. So, yeah, Zach Wheeler would be my number three.
Wheeler's the number four pitcher by ADP.
Yeah, that's wrong. But number three is fine. It's Shohei Ohtani's third, so I can cross that one off. But I see what you're saying. Yeah, the guy that's number three is not my number. No, yeah. We'll talk about him in a minute. So that brings the fun part. Now it's gonna slowly. I think we might have the same number four. Actually, who's your number four? Now I think about it, we might
still have the same number four. As we hype this as a battle between our top 20.
It will. The back half of this draft will get fun.
This is more like a freaking pillow fight. Who's your four? Is who the hell is my number four?
Luis Castillo.
No.
Awesome. We differentiate already. Here we go. Game on. Okay. Here we go.
Kevin Gausman. I think what sets Gausman apart from Castillo, and I have Castillo next, just kind of foreshadowing that, is better. I think better win potential on Toronto than Seattle. And I think the track record, yes, Castillo struck out 219 guys last year, but the track record of Ks for Kevin Gausman is really damn good. 237 Ks last year, 200 plus each of the previous 2 years. There was a slight dip in the second half, but I think we're nitpicking. I think Gausman, especially with the innings totals, 192, 175, 185, the last three seasons, like he's a horse. He's on a, I think Toronto's lineup will be better than what we saw in 2023. And outside of that, like, almost won the Cy Young this year, and I think he'll be in contention again.
Yep, he's very good. I'll be talking about him shortly, but Luis Castillo is my number four. And I've always loved Castillo. We were all excited when he got traded to Seattle. It's been nothing short of outstanding in Seattle. The whip was always a concern in Castillo's career. This was 111 and then 108, I believe, last season. So he's definitely locked that statistic in, which is one people always pinpointed as an issue, or is 108 then 110 last year. Still very good. ERA ratios are great. Strikeouts, you mentioned, got up to 197 innings last year, which I think is tremendous. Mm-hmm. He was a legit guy you could just throw out there no matter who he was facing. I remember he was in matchups against Shohei. He was in matchups against the Rangers. It didn't matter. He was the ace on the mound. I don't see that changing at all. The other reason I really, really like Castillo, you know, if we have to like grasp at straws, he's a little younger than these other guys. He's 31, going to be 32. Still older than I think most would expect if you asked how old Luis Castillo was. He's been around for a bit, but I absolutely love him, and it is grasping at straws between Castillo and Gausman because Gausman is my number five. So, yes.
Okay. So I've got Castillo five. You've got Gausman five. For me, these guys are in the same tier. Only thing I'll add on Castillo is just like a weird, like he's different. He's a different pitcher than what we thought, what we saw a couple years ago. Cincinnati used to have that like amazing changeup that was pretty much his bread and butter. Castillo threw it only 16% of the time last year and basically replaced that in recent years with a slider and more four seamers. Used to be a big ground ball guy. And in Cincinnati, right, that helps with the homers. The infield defense wasn't that great, but still ground ball rate the last 3 years from Castillo has gone from 57 2 years ago to 47% last year to 39%. So he's almost more of like a fly ball pitcher now.
Using the ballpark.
He's probably pitching to the park. I agree, Bubba, the Seattle version of Luis Castillo for the last season and a half has been pretty, pretty good. So
yeah.
You got anything to add on Gausman on what I talked about or
not really? Like I pulled up his page to glance at it again. Very similar. Like even look at innings pitch between these guys, he's got more strikeout upside, but maybe, you know, they're very, very similar. Honestly, it depends on where you want to go. Gausman definitely has the strikeout upside. I think Castillo might have the better ratios, but not by much. So yeah, if you want to pick divisions, I'll take the West versus the AL East, but they're very, like, he's the same tier. I can't argue this either way.
Yep. All right. Number six. This is where I know I'll differ from you. Going Pablo Lopez.
Oh.
Going Pablo Lopez. And maybe I'm the Pablo Lopez guy this year. I don't know. But like the last two seasons, Pablo Lopez have been really, really good. The 2023 version of Pablo Lopez debuted this new sweeper that he threw 21% of the time. He's now got three pitches that he throws over 20% of the time. They all miss bats at over 16% swinging strike rate, which translation is really good. And I've talked about the admittedly bizarre injury history with Pablo Lopez, and that's still like in the back of my mind. But the last two seasons, 180 innings, 194 innings in 2023. That's good for 11th most out of any starting pitcher the last two seasons. And so, like, yes, the shoulder thing is still kind of there, but like the dude's been healthy and volume, when the volume's been there each of the last two seasons, and the skills are right up there, I think, with Gausman, Castillo, and Wheeler. The volume has been the last two seasons as well. So Lopez for me is not only sixth, but I think he's in this tier of Cole, Wheeler, Gausman, Castillo. Like I could throw Lopez as high as three and I would be fine drafting him there. I have a lot of Pablo Lopez already in early drafts, which I don't like because I don't want to have like every team with him. But I really believe in what we saw last year from Lopez and what we'll see in 24.
Yeah, I like Lopez. You definitely like him a lot more than me. So I was waiting for that one. We kind of joked about it on Tuesday when you tweet out your top six in alphabetical order. I kind of knew where Lopez was landing in that mix. So I was looking forward to seeing how this one played out. We'll get to Lopez a little later in mine. Let's put it that way.
Much later or a little later?
A few more picks for now. Yeah. This next guy was tough for me because, like I always say with rankings, there's some guys I love to just rank like 20 spots lower just to basically show I don't want to draft these guys. I don't want these guys. But you still have to draft them like not close, but close enough type thing. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And my number six is Corbin Burns. And it's only for the fact that if he gets right, he showed signs of being that really good guy. But just watching him pitch last year, the end numbers were solid in the end. 193 innings, you know, 3.39 ERA, the XFIPs and XERAs, they supported most of that. You know, batting average against was great. The whip was great. The numbers looked very good, but the strikeout rate plummeted. He was a much different pitcher. If you watched him start to start, like one thing I like to think of is in DFS, like he used to always be the expensive guy. He rarely ever paid off because he would get you a quality start per se, but he wasn't dominating like these top tier pitchers do. And that's where he moves down this list for me. Like, he's still very good, but he's more of a George Kirby, more of a Zach Gallen type guy for me that than these elite guys like he was going into last draft season. I could be totally wrong. He could show up because, you know, it's contract, he wants to get traded, all that kind of good stuff. We'll see. But right now I got Corbin Burns sixth. He was in do not draft for me last year. Probably won't be a draft for me again this year.
I just put him in at seven. So the only thing I'll add, I would have had Burns lower, but the more I looked into Burns, he did rebound in the second half. So here's his, you mentioned the K's were down, Bubba. Burns' strikeout rate by month last year, the first 3 months, April, May, June, it was 21, 25, and 23%. Like, legitimately league average, which for Corbin Burns is terrible. Those numbers went to 32% in July, 24% in August, and 30% in September. So the K's came back second half of the season. And to me, that's a really good sign. I'm huge on how, you know, what have you done for me lately? And how did you finish the season if you're a starting pitcher? And Burns, at least I think, redeemed himself, not totally redeemed yourself, but somewhat redeemed himself with that second half performance. So I've got him seventh, but again, to what you were saying too, Bubba, like, Burns is the number three starting pitcher by ADP. I doubt I will have much Corbin Burns because I have the guys we talked about ahead of him.
I take all of them ahead, available. Obviously. Yeah. I take all these guys, obviously. So would you, that's kind of why we rank them these ways. So yeah. Highly unlikely Burns. I highly likely we're in a draft where all these other guys go ahead of Corbin Burns. So it's just the way of the world. My number seven, and I'm guessing just because you love him so much, might be your number eight. We'll see. George Kirby. I have George Kirby at number seven. Is he your number eight? Because I won't steal your thunder this time.
He just is. No, but okay. Go for it.
Okay. And you probably have better stuff than me, but we've talked about him a lot on the review pod. The dude is just a whip machine. And I know I've said whip a few times on this show, but it's a category that's not talked about enough. It was a massive hole in my game for a long time, and it still can be. If you look at some of my drafts, like, there's a point where pitching sucks so much, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to punt whip and hope these guys figure it out this year. Like, it sucks, but that's just the reality of the situation. Kirby is a beast. He's an accumulator, though. I made the comparison on the review show that he's like the Sandy Alcantara of this type of draft. That scares the crap out of me. I'm very aware of that. At the same time, Kirby's extremely young. He's incorporating new pitches into his mix. Like, he's becoming a different, more developed pitcher, which is an amazing sign. As Ryan said about Burns, Kirby kept finishing stronger and stronger as the season went on, and that keeps him high on my board. I've got a few shares already this year. I'll trust him. He's my number seven, and honestly, in certain drafts, if I take him over Burns, Burns won't be there, but Kirby is my number seven.
Yeah. I think we're both sticking our neck out a little bit for him, but so be it. And that's why we do these rankings. That's why it's fun. You mentioned the pitch mix change. I mentioned this a few times in previous shows, but Kirby did throw that new split finger more often in season, and it worked, but then it kind of didn't. So the strikeout rate for George Kirby, his year-long strikeout rate last year was 23%, which is like the problem with George Kirby. Like, 23% is, it's fine, but if you're gonna have an SP1, you want more strikeouts than that. And I think what we're both banking on is the, what was it, in the second half, 25% K rate. Like, we're banking on the split finger having at least just a little bit more help with the K's, and then you put that whip on top of it across 200 innings, which seems reasonable for George Kirby given what we've seen so far. Maybe 190. I shouldn't say 200 is reasonable. 200 is really hard in 2023. But
he's the seventh ADP off the board right now.
Yeah.
So we're not sticking our neck out that far.
I guess we're not.
He's right there.
But no, you make a great point about whip. I mean, the last thing I'll add with Kirby is that you do need to follow that up with a high strikeout guy. We'll call those guys out as we go in the top 20. But
I love the Strider Kirby combo. If you can pull that off, that's like the perfect storm. If you can do that, that's just, you're giddy in so many ways. Even Gossman Kirby, because Gossman strikes out so many. I'd be cool with that.
Cole Kirby.
But if you can somehow do Strider Kirby, that's a ratio strikeout. I mean, beautiful situation.
Strider anyone.
Yeah, but you throw that guy with another elite ratio with that many innings we talked about before, like that many innings of good ratio just is so much of a difference maker, just like the same point if it's bad ratio, so many innings. So you put those two combined, probably going for at least, let's just be generous, 180 each, probably closer to 200 each at what they can do. You could do a lot of things with your staff after that. A lot of things. Yeah. It's pretty nice.
The thing is, if you do that, it's probably your third round pick on Kirby. Because if you get Strider, you're probably like eighth or ninth pick, 100%. Somewhere like that in a 15 teamer. And yeah, I don't think Kirby's coming back to you in the fourth round.
No, Kirby's a 37 ADP. He's gone as high as 30, as low as 45 over the last month.
Okay.
So yeah, he'd be your third round pick. But it makes sense. If you take Strider, say you take Strider in the top five, you get Kirby back in round three, that's feasible. It's very doable.
Yep.
So it's a strategy. There's many of them. My number eight is Zach Gallen. If any of these guys are your next round pick, let me know, because I don't want to talk all the time. So I have Zach Gallen at number eight, and I'm always feel like I'm higher on Zach Gallen than most. He got the Cy Young last year. He's obviously higher this year because of that. He's the eighth off the board, ADP of 40, and I just moved him up today, so it wasn't intentional to have him there. I just love everything about Zach Gallen. One thing a couple years ago, you mentioned, you know, the numbers weren't great, but he threw the most innings in the second half. He got healthy. We saw him throw 184 innings 2 years ago, 210 this past year, plus the postseason. That'd be my only concern, is those postseason innings that we see that kind of hamper guys at times the next year. We'll wait and see there. But then again, Gallen's going to be 28. Super, super young. Strikeout stuff's there. Ratios aren't bad. They're not as elite as some of these other guys. They're still pretty, pretty good. So I just love me some Zach Gallen.
Yeah, I've got him nine, of course. Damn, jeez, man.
Pablo Lopez just screwed it all up.
He's a tier. So if I'm tiering this, Kirby and Gallen are a tier below, for me, Burns, Lopez, Castillo, Gossman, Wheeler, Cole. So this is, I do think this is somewhat interchangeable with a few of the guys that are going next. Zach Gallen, like, I mean, he had 350 ERA last year, and the HQ expected ERA was right there too. Like, this isn't I don't think this is a low threes ERA guy.
No, it's not. That's my concern.
And he did throw those 210 innings last year with 17 wins to get strikeouts and rotisserie value, because, I mean, that's good. What are the odds of both of those repeating next year? Like, I don't think it's that great. So, like, I feel like even though I have Gallen as my number nine pitcher, I still feel like I'm kind of low on him compared to the market, because I don't think we're going to get a repeat of what we saw last year. I could be wrong, but I don't see it.
Now we get to start rocking the boat compared to ADP. And obviously this can vary, and this guy's like roughly the 16th or 17th pitcher off the board right now. But we are going with the one, the only, Bubba the Bloom favorite, Fredrick Peralta is my number.
All right, there we go. Nice.
Freddy Peralta. This is like we start planting flags. You had Pablo Lopez planting a flag. Peralta, and trust me, I was tempted to keep moving with Freddy. Like, but then I sit back and I'm like, okay, let's be real. Just for a second.
Let's go.
We haven't seen the longevity his whole career. Let's just calm it down. Got up to 165 last year, though, which is very nice. We could hopefully see a bump there. But if you guys listen to our show enough, you know how we feel about him. Ratios were great last year. Strikeout stuff was insane. Finished with a 30.9% K rate. But what was the big factor is the second half. The second half was next level. So many Bloom boards with it. You know, 470 ERA in the first half, 281 in the second half. That's different. But the good stuff, the really, really good stuff in the first and second half. Where is it on here? Trying to find the set. There it is. There it is. K to walk. Okay. Second half, 30.6% K to walk. So he had a 36.3% K rate and a 5.6% walk rate. Even the indicators, 2.54 xFIP in the second half. He had a whip of 0.88 in the second half of the season. And some people say, well, the second half was smaller than the first half because, you know, games played. He still threw 73 innings in the second half of the season. He still got it done pretty good. So, love me, Fredrick Peralta. We've talked about him plenty of times on this show. He's my number nine, and he's a guy that I would love to. If you want to get sneaky, a Kirby Peralta combo could be fun too.
So I have Peralta 13th, and you know I love me some Peralta. That 30%, that 30% K rate in the second half. I think that was the best in baseball of any pitcher.
According to the first pitch Arizona favorite right there.
The case against Peralta are these three numbers: 144, 78, and 166. Yeah. That's his innings pitch the last three seasons. Not to say, you know, who knows what that next number will be. These are starting pitchers. We have no freaking clue. But that's the risk in using your SP1 on a guy who, yes, was great in the second half. Yes, not only was great, was one of the best pitchers in baseball in the second half, but it was like less than 80 innings. So you're going out on a limb banking on that second half repeating in for all of 2024 at this price. Not saying it won't. I'm just saying that's the downside to Freddy Peralta at this stage of the draft.
100%. It's a definite risk, but he's my number 9. Who is your number 10? Now we get the floor. The floor is yours. We're back.
God, I can't believe I'm doing this.
Oh, tell me it's the guy I put 10, because it'll be everything you just said about Peralta's downside. Tell me it's him.
All right. As I type it in. No, it's my nemesis. It's Aaron Nola.
Oh, okay.
He's my nemesis. 11.
He's my 11.
It's Aaron Nola. He's a better pitcher than what we saw last year with a 4.46 ERA. He's a better pitcher than that. The home run. So when I look at what I call luck factors for starting pitchers, people don't like the word luck. Maybe, and there is nuance to it. But homer to fly ball rate for Aaron Nola was 16% last year, well above league average. That tends to regress back to MLB average of like 10-11%, which is what he threw in 2022, Aaron Nola. And the strand rate was really low, 66%. Your league average on that is 72%. So more often, base runners that Aaron Nola allowed to get on base, more often they were scoring than in previous years. And thus the 4.46 ERA. Aaron Nola had a 1.15 whip. Aaron Nola had 202 strikeouts, and Aaron Nola threw 194 innings last year in a quote-unquote down season. Those are some pretty damn good numbers. And I'm banking on the home run, the gopheritis subsiding in 2024, the volume continuing to be what it's been. Aaron Nola, 200-plus strikeouts each of the last four full seasons. He's a volume machine. Yes, the ERA might be a little bit elevated, but the whip's going to be there. The K's are going to be there. I think the wins are going to be there on a good team. I kind of almost, like, as I'm talking about Aaron Nola, this isn't good. This isn't good. Like, I can move him above Gallen or Kirby at this point.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I that's how I hate myself in May and June. So
I have,
here we go.
I have a handful of Aaron Nola shares already, so I understand. I'm right back. I'm with you. He's my 11th if you want to put him there. I don't need to add on to that. But, I agree with pretty much the good, the bad, the ugly you mentioned on all of that right there. My number 10, this goes with your Freddy Peralta thing, and it's a conversation I've had with you, I've had with others. Mike Kerwin is one of the biggest fanboys of Tyler Glass now this season. Going to the Dodgers put him at number 10 for me. The reason I have Glass now at 10 is a complete risk-reward situation. 100% acknowledging this. He had 120 innings last year, career high. We don't have to, like, sugarcoat this. That's after 6.2. That's after 88, 57, so on and so forth. Very clearly career highs. But when healthy, that's a big, you can all caps that if you like. When healthy, the dude was Spencer Strider in the second half, and Spencer Strider wasn't Spencer Strider. Like, he is that kind of elite pitcher. Strikeout stuff's great. The new pitch arsenal he's put together over the last year or so is outstanding. Going to LA, not being the ace, is another plus, obviously, the way we talked about Yamamoto. Why wouldn't Glass now be that? And maybe Yamamoto's better than Glass now. I haven't seen Yamamoto. We'll talk about that when we get to him. That's the biggest problem I have with Yamamoto. He could be a top five guy. I have no clue. Glass now, I've at least seen. I think if you can get 150 innings out of Glass now, he's a top 10 pitcher. I believe that. It's kind of that discussion we've had about, like, Jacob DeGrom last year, how many innings? And people say, like, give me 115, 120. Like, people were cool with that. Give me 150 to 160 of Glass now. I think you get a top 10 pitcher. I really do. So have I drafted much Tyler Glass now? No. But do I believe if you want to, like, the risk reward and maybe an overall contest? Sure. And right now, Glass now is the 10th pitcher off the board according to ADP, with an ADP of 44. So that's my argument for Tyler Glass now. Ryan is shaking his head profusely. Must not even be in his top 20.
Oh, man. I mean, he barely made it. He's my 18th.
And now we're having fun.
Against my better judgment, he's in my top 20. I just can't. You said that. I blacked out after you said
risk reward. 100.
No, after you said career high 120 innings, I blacked out. So
yeah, it's fair.
I cannot have a starting pitcher that I take as my first or second pitcher in the top four rounds with the injury history that Tyler Glass now has. And who knows, like, so yes, on a per inning basis, like maybe, but we haven't seen Tyler Glass now hold up. What do innings 120 through 160 look like next year? Is there going to be any kind of wear down? It's not going to happen anyway, but is there any type of wear down that's going to happen if he miraculously stays healthy? So I get the per inning argument, but like the dude has to throw more than 120 innings in a season. I mean, he's 30 years old, man. He's 30 years old.
Hey, I'm not an ageist here. I'm not going to start age shaming, but Tyler Glass now is legit. Just got to stay on the field. And I fully acknowledge that. Fully acknowledge that.
Damn. And if you were a Dodger fan, he'd be like six then. Cause you're,
yep. Know. Yep. I had him here before he got traded. Well, I had him like at 14 or something before he got traded. So I moved him up to 10.
All right. All right. Yeah. I don't like it, but that's I'll accept
enough.
It.
It's fair enough. Who's your 11? Since mine's Nola.
Yeah. Like I said, I blacked out after you, talking about Glass now there. We go Blake Snell.
Hey, real quick, before you go on, we have a Glass now comment in the chat. Randy says, I agree with Bubba on everything he said about Glass now. His current ADP is just too risky for me to take that shot. I agree with you 100%. But if you want to take the risk, that's where you got to take him. That's where he's worth it.
Yep. Great comment, Randy. Fully agree with you. Yeah, I'm going to go Blake Snell at 11. There's no way a 2.25 ERA is going to repeat.
Innings argument all over again.
What's that?
The innings argument all over again.
Yeah.
Consistency.
Yeah. I mean, he threw 180.
Oh, innings. He's my boy now.
Unlike
he's
my your boy, Glass now.
At least give me Freddie as my boy, at least at like 160. Give me that one. I at least went on the march for him too. I didn't turn my back on him.
You can have more than one boy, Freddie and Glass now. Unlike Glass now, Snell actually threw 180 innings last year. I just love the strikeouts, and no, he's not going to return a 2.25 ERA again, but I think he could go like 330, 350. I think there is something mildly to that walk rate that it is high. It's very high. But a lot of that is by design. He just does not give in. The pitch mix for Blake Snell, one of your other boys, Simeone, non-player.
Okay, where we go? How many goddamn players do I have here?
Simeone tweeted out that Blake Snell is had three pitches with a 20% swinging strike last year. His curveball, changeup, and slider. He's the only pitcher in baseball to be able to do that. And I just think the arsenal's there. The strikeouts are going to be there. There are issues with Snell pitching deep into games. I get that because of the walk rate, but I think it's good enough to go 11 for me.
Yeah, that's fair. Very fair.
It may change. Well, it will probably change depending on where he signs. But
I've moved Snell around a lot. He's a tough one for me to fully grasp. I had shares of him, though. Aaron Nola is my 11, so who's your 12?
Framber Valdez.
Whoo! Now we're getting fun here.
Framber Valdez.
He barely made my top 20.
I've got Framber. 200 innings each of the last two seasons.
That was a long pause, by the way. Like you were trying to convince yourself again.
200 innings each of the last two seasons. His middle name is actually Quality Start.
That's fair. That's good.
So, you've got that. He's on a great team. I do see the second half fade, and that is a little bit worrisome. That somewhat goes against what I was saying earlier about, I don't know, whoever the hell I was talking about. But Framber Valdez actually came back in September. It wasn't really a second half fade. It was a July and August fade. 28% strikeout rate for Framber Valdez in the second or in September. The whiffs came back, and he's just a ground ball machine. He throws innings. Like, I just think that combination of, and he gets wins. Like, he only had 12 last year, but 17 the year before. I think that in the categories that aren't as like appreciated, I think Valdez kind of shine. So I'm going Framber despite the second half fade. I think I feel pretty good about that.
I like Framber. I'll talk about him towards the end of the show. Number 12 for me is Pablo Lopez. So now we got Pablo off the board on my side. I agree with a lot of the things you said. My biggest concern here, and again, to teach their own, like you mentioned, the strikeout gains, well, there was a gap between 21, 22, and 23. 22, it dropped back to like 23.6% compared to the 27. If we just get that drop again, he's not a top 5-6 guy. That's the only difference, because we're talking about stuff that's so close with this grouping here. So for me, it's just that little thing. We talk consistency. Okay, 2 out of 3 years is good. That's good. Yeah, that's good. I don't know. With Pablo, he's really good. We saw the 184 innings. We saw 190 innings. That's awesome. I need to see the strikeouts like consistently to move him up. Because honestly, if he were to do the strikeouts consistently, he's Luis Castillo. And that's kind of where you're at.
Damn right he is.
I completely agree with you there. I completely agree. So that's why I'm saying the only difference for me, and it's kind of, you know, chicken ass of me, because I'm sitting there pounding the floor for Glasnow. It was 120 innings, and I'm talking about consistency, but skill set wise, I'll take Glasnow over Lopez. But Lopez is at least proven it. So I have him at 12. I'm ready to be wrong on Pablo on the plus direction. That's for sure.
Yeah, and Pablo is going. I think he's the 8th pitcher off the board. In Gladiators, at least that's the ADP I've got up right now.
Yeah, I got DC's. He's the 9th.
Yeah, too low, people. Too late. Move him up.
Early. We'll see.
I had Peralta to 13th. So I already talked about him.
All right. Well, my 13th is Blake Snell, and so. Okay. That's why I just laugh. I'm like, I'm close to you. I've moved him up and down a few times. I have shares of Blake Snell. I love what he did. He's done. And even this last year, like the innings is the joke. Like if he does 180 innings, he's 2-for-2 on Cy Young's. This is great. I think going to San Francisco is going to be huge for him. That's going to be great. But with Snell, it was really fun when I had Kyle Bland on bench with Bubba on Thursday, because we talked about Snell and he talked about the PLV stuff with his pitches and then the scatter plots and how he utilizes the zone. And like everyone says, well, he walks too many guys, because if you look, he's always painting the corners and doing this and that. But in doing so, he also gets guys to, because it's so close to the strike zone, does get a lot of guys to swing and hit and get weak contact and get them out of problems. So it's like a risk reward he's willing to take on. And that's why he can be very successful certain starts and be a headache certain starts. But the fact he's doing it on purpose is what I'm trying to say. And that means he's pitching. There's other guys that just can't control and they're like kind of hoping for a region of the strike zone. He's purposely trying to paint these corners because he's not going to blow it past you that often consistently, but he can at least pitch to you and make it work. And he proved that last year. Can he do it again? We'll see. If he could do it again, he'd already be signed for one for more than Yamamoto, and he'd probably be at least a top 10 pitcher for both of us, I'd imagine, if he could prove that we were confident in him doing it again.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the confidence factor, so I have him at 13.
All right. And I do think, with the Yamamoto signing, there were so many teams in on Yamamoto. Everyone else was in a holding pattern. Yeah. Maybe this is the optimism in me, but, like, I do think now that we're going to start seeing dominoes fall. The teams that were in on Yamamoto are now looking at Snell, Jomo. I think you tweeted something to that effect.
Yeah, I said that $300 million you wanted to give Yamamoto, give it to Snell and Montgomery for like 6 years each or something. Let's go.
In your Yamamoto signing rage.
I honestly, once they started saying over 10 years and over $300 million, I mean, dead serious, I didn't want anything to do with it. Just because, why are you giving this guy, like, he could be amazing. We've never seen it. And you're giving a guy that much money. That's just insanity to me. But I hope he's great for baseball. Who's your 14?
All right, 14. Going with a guy who got an upside in the baseball forecaster of 15 wins and a 3.25 ERA. Did I write his box? No, our friend Corbin Young wrote his box.
Mitch Keller?
No, it's actually if Matt Vierling transforms into a pitcher from a position player, it would be Matt Vierling. No, it's Jesus Luzardo for me.
Yes,
Luzardo. The question with Luzardo throughout his entire career has been volume, and he answered it at least for one season. But again, what have you done for me lately? How did you finish? Jesus Luzardo threw 179 innings, and not only did he throw 179, the skills save for a minor uptick in walks in the second half, the skills were strong. He missed just as many bats in the second half as he did in the first. Lizardo's velocity was the exact same from first to second half. So not only did he get to those 180, and maybe this is I'm making the Tyler Glasnow case for you at this point, because this is what happened with Jesus Lizardo last year.
I wasn't gonna say it, but thank you.
It happened. It was glorious. I do think, like, HQ were projecting him at 360 ERA with 200 strikeouts. I think that's great. He's 26. There could even be another level to Jesus Lizardo. So I actually like Lizardo a lot at 14. Maybe more than Framber, but I don't know. That's why we do this exercise.
Yep. If you want, I have Lizardo at 15. You can put him there. I'll add on to that right now.
Yeah,
go for it. Originally, I had him around 20. I've moved him up weekly, you know, a little bit. I've come to the conclusion that I'll probably have him in my top 10 by March. And if you want, like, a quote-unquote hot take right now, Jesus Lizardo will outperform Corbin Burns this year. Like, I love what Jesus Lizardo's doing. Like, this, what everything Ryan talked about, the improvements. This is a guy that just had some injury issues early, but still super, super young. The word everybody hates, pedigree, was there with Lizardo. He was a high draft pick. He was supposed to be this ace pitcher. He's coming into his own. Unlike AJ Puck, who was a teammate of his in Oakland, and then obviously in Miami too. They're supposed to be like the one and the two. And Puck went a certain way. Lizardo got healthy and started doing it again. I love everything about the adjustments he made that Ryan mentioned, the improvements throughout the season, and the fact that he threw the innings last year was the biggest, like, because last year I was very nervous about him. I don't think I had any shares. I had to see it type thing. We talk about that, Ryan, like, safer drafters compared to others. But we saw it with Lizardo this last year, and I'm in. I am all in on him, and he will outperform Corbin Burns this year. He's my 15. I say I keep moving him up. So it's a hot take now, but by March it might be neck and neck on my draft board. So, yeah.
I like it.
14, I don't have a ton of analysis, but that's where I have Yamamoto. I have Yamamoto at 14. I was so torn because we talked about how so many of these guys can be intermixed, and you could argue certain spots in here. And, you know, this guy's been a Cy Young / MVP type guy in Japan. If he's as good as advertised, heck, he should be a top five guy. He might be. Who knows? I don't know. So I'm putting him at 14. I almost put Jesus over him. I almost put Yamamoto above Pablo. I sat there and I've thought about this for a while, waiting for him to sign. It was very tricky. I don't have a ton of analysis on him because, again, I haven't seen the Ding guy. Like, I don't know. Before he signed, I had him at 24. But I kept trying to think, where would I have him? Where would I? Because I couldn't put him in the top 20 without knowing where he signed.
Yep.
Dodgers, give him 14. Might be too low. We'll see. I probably won't have any shares this year, though.
Given where I think Yamamoto will be going in drafts, I agree. You won't.
Yeah. He's going to skyrocket. I'll say this much. Frank Stanfield tweeted this out, because Eno Saris came out with an article about Yamamoto earlier in December. So Frank tweeted this out, just a comparison of ADPs. It was pretty good. So he said, since Eno Saris released his Yamamoto article on December 12th, Yamamoto's DC ADP from October 1st when they started to December 11th, SP22. From December 12th through December 21st, just 9 days, the time after the article, already up to SP14. Probably likely to keep that. Does an eight person jump? It might keep going.
You know, moving markets.
Yeah, it's because no one knows. That's the thing that's so tricky.
Nobody has any idea.
And so to put that kind of early round faith in a guy that you have no, it's tough. It's real tough to do. And that's why I won't do it. I'm weakling like that.
I mean, I think Yamamoto probably will end up third, fourth round in 15 teamers. And I'm not going to do it, but I'm not saying it's a bad pick. It's not the type of pick I'm going to make, because, like I said, like we've both been saying, we've never seen him. We're just going off of like articles and foreign stat translations, which is very risky business. I had Yamamoto outside, and so I had him on the list just now. He's my 17th ahead of Mr. Glasnow. But I do think with LA, like, you do need to give some credit there. So he's there. Yeah. He's there just as like a tip of the cap, but I'm not gonna end up with him in drafts just because I don't know. It's not the way I roll, not the way either of us roll.
Pretty much.
All right. My number 15. So you talked about Lizardo.
Yep.
I'm going Logan Gilbert at 15. Nice.
That's good. We both have him in our top 20. We had a listener ask, what's it going to take to get him into the top 20? Yeah. So that's the easy answer.
And he is top 15
for you. Yeah. Good.
Volume king already, 185, 190 innings each of the last two seasons. The whip's been great. It's funny. We talk about the George Kirby split finger before. Guess who debuted a new split finger the entire season in 2023, threw it 15% of the time with a 20% swinging strike rate, which is elite. That would be Logan Gilbert. So that also, I think, bodes well for George Kirby, just being on the same staff, and those guys are working with each other all the time, same pitching development crew behind them. It worked for Kirby to increase not only the swinging strike, but got a few more points in strikeout rate. The control isn't Kirby-esque, but the control is really good. I do think Logan Gilbert, like, I would not draft a team with Kirby and Gilbert. They're too much of the same type of guy. But I think if you compare Logan Gilbert with even like a Blake Snell, an Aaron Nola, more volume guy that's going to get strikeouts, I think that's a great way to start your staff.
Don't disagree. Who's your 16?
Your boy.
Logan Webb.
Logan Webb.
Yeah.
Logan Webb. And the reason he's not higher is just because of the strikeouts. So I think his ERA last year, I don't have it offhand. It was like low threes. It was the worst ERA that he's had the last 3 years. Yep. Just a ground ball machine. Like, I'm sure you have Webb somewhere soon, so I won't steal your thunder, but
go for it.
He's not only 16th, but he's like, I just feel solid as hell with Logan Webb. And I think you can get him in the fifth or sixth round of 15 teamers right now. I don't really see that rising. Like, I don't feel like Logan Webb's a riser type of guy. He's just kind of there. And I think we should be grabbing him without much hesitation at that point in the draft.
Yeah. Logan Webb is my 17th. So I'll just talk about him real quick while we're on the topic. It's what you mentioned. And big thing is the workhorse mentality, 192 innings and 216 innings the last 2 years. You mentioned that 3.25 ERA. It's been 3.25 or lower for three straight years, which is great. Strikeout rate's over 20% three straight years. It came back up after a down 2022, and it's something I've talked about tons of times because he's always changing his pitch mix up. He's a ground ball machine. He's a pitcher, and that's what he does. Like, he, whatever the situation is, he basically pitches to it. So there's going to be some starts he doesn't strike a bunch of guys out, and there's other starts he's going to get close to 10 Ks. Like, that's just what he does, and that's what's fun about it. And it's nice for fantasy because he's just going to get out there and deal. He's going to try to go at least seven every time out. And that's a very powerful thing to have in your back pocket on your fantasy team. So, yeah, I got Logan Webb at 17.
Real quick, before we – just to kind of break up player. I posted this on Twitter the other day of the number of guys I'd feel confident in with an SP1. Put it at 7. What's your number? How many of these guys are you confident – like, if you're spending a top 3 round pick on a true anchor, and everyone's definition of that is a little bit different, but like, how far down your list are you kind of happy to take that guy as your SP1?
It's probably 6 or 7 because I'll stay 6 because I won't have Burns. So it'll be 7th. It'll be Kirby's the last guy on my list. Okay. I don't love it, but it's Kirby. I think I've been stuck with Nola as my ace on one because I waited on pitching, but I went quickly to get Lizardo. So it's one of those type of things, but I'd say 6 or 7, give or take.
Okay.
It's weird. Like, it's one of those, I feel like you just got to start attacking pitching heavy if you don't get one of those top guys. Like, go hard.
And I agree. And I think that is, if you don't get one of those first 6 or 7 that at least we've been talking about in our opinion, there are some options and different types of pitchers. Like these last few guys we've been talking about, you do have kind of the volume control guys like your Kirby, your Logan Gilbert, your Logan Webb, but you can also pair those guys with some of the strikeout guys that we've been talking about as well. So it can easily be done. Well, not easily, but it can definitely be done to pair some of these guys in the tier 1B or tier 2 together and kind of make up for not getting a true quote unquote ace if you want to start with bullying bats early in your draft.
Yep, it is a way to go about it. My 16, and it was like Webb and this pitcher are to me interchangeable, but I went Max Fried at 16.
Okay.
And it's mainly for the better team context and there is a little bit actually more consistent strikeout upside with Max Fried compared to Logan Webb. But, it, you know, everyone will say 77 innings last year. But we talked about this on the review show. Prior to that, he had the innings increase. He was a hoss in that rotation. ERA 2.55 last year, 2.48, 3.04, 2.25. Like, those are pretty dang elite from Max Fried. The whips are usually pretty awesome as well. So the ratios are great. Just a matter on everything else you get with Max Fried. And his strikeout rate increased as he came back healthy off the IL in the second half of the season. Went from like 24% to 26%. Doesn't seem like a lot, but over a full season, that adds up in a big, big way. So I like Max Fried. Like, he's a guy that I think I had closer to a top 10 pitcher last year, and then he got hurt, so kind of sucked. But I've always been a big fan of Max Fried. He's boring, but if you need like some ratio help, if like you missed an ace, you want some ratio help or something, Max Fried's a great guy to look at.
I think we've got our first pitcher that's not in the other one's top 20. So Max Fried is not in my.
It took a while.
It did, to go all the way to 17 before that happened. Maybe we talk to each other too much. Imagine that.
Maybe draft too much together. All those things.
I've got Fried, according to my manual projections or whatever, 24th. So he's not that far out of the top 20. For me, it's the two forearm strains last year. Like, yeah. I get if you can look past that, because he did come back and end the season healthy, and that's big, but that's really the only reason why Fried's not in my top 20.
That's fair. That's fair. Now I'm curious to see these last three, how we differ in these. What do you got at 18?
Glasnow. Glasnow, 18, man. That's What's his ADP got him at?
I got it right here. Give me a second. He is ADP 44. He is the 10th pitcher off
ninth,
the board.
Ninth, 10th pitcher. Yeah, so I'm not getting any Glasnow. And as I made my point earlier, I'm fine with. Yeah.
My number 18 is a pitcher that I wanted to push higher, and I just might, and that is Kode Senga. This guy, it was amazing last year. A sub-3 ERA. You know, the xERAs, xFIPs think he should have been almost a run higher. But a lot of that was obviously first half of the season was a big walk issue. And he increased that, or fixed that, I should say, in a big way in the second half of the year. He went from a 12.3% walk rate in the first half to 9.6. He still went lower than 9.6. I'm not oblivious to that. But those kind of improvements in your first run in the bigs is huge in my mind. And that just points to hopefully bigger and better things to come from Kode Senga. He threw almost 170 innings in his first time over here. Just to do all those things he did, to show the improvements, the comfortability, all that stuff in your first stint in the major leagues from overseas, like, this is what you should hope from Yamamoto, in my opinion. Honestly, like, if he can put a Senga season together this year, that's amazing. But the thing is, people are going to draft him ahead of that. That's like we talked about our difficulty with Yamamoto. If he can do what Senga did, that's outstanding. Now, is that top 10 worthy? Probably not, but still pretty dang good.
Pretty dang good.
So I got Kode Senga at 18. He's a guy that I could easily see myself moving into a top, like a Blake Snellish type pick. And yeah, I like Kode Senga quite a bit.
I've got Senga 20th, so I'll just kind of piggyback a couple things. I don't see the walk rate improving. That's the big problem for me with Kode Senga. So, like, everything you just said about Senga, I agree with. I just think you need to get, and this is another one, if you wait and you can go, if you start with like three hitters and you want to get, so you don't get your quote unquote ace and you want to go two pitchers in the fourth and fifth round, like, I think one of the Logans plus Kode Senga is like freaking sweet in the fourth and fifth. You combo those two guys, you get the strikeouts from Senga, you get the volume and the ratios from Logan Gilbert or Logan Webb, something like that, I think can really work. I do like Senga a lot. I think the strikeouts are legit, but I do think the walk rate is also unfortunately legit, in that I don't really see much improvement coming. His walk or his ball percentage, which is what I use to validate a walk rate, your league average on that is 36%. Kode Senga had a 39% ball rate, which he just doesn't consistently throw strikes enough for the walk rate to improve. But again, like you were saying, I mean, this was his first year in the States, first year in New York City. Like, if that does improve, Kode Senga could be top 10 pitcher, but I can't bank on it.
ADP's around 68 over the last month, right between Logan Gilbert and Logan Webb. Literally going right between the two. Yeah. So there you go. Who is your 19?
I have Grayson Rodriguez as my number 19 pitcher. Talked about him a couple weeks ago at some point, so I won't rehash. I'll just quickly rehash everything. It's more just the version of Grayson Rodriguez that we saw in the second half after he came back from the minors. The first half was a disaster. If that second half sticks for all of 2024, Grayson Rodriguez is a borderline top 10 pitcher.
Yep.
So, and you tack on this was like the best pitching prospect in baseball. So it's not just some dude that had a hot second half. He had a hot second half, but he also the scouting reports on Grayson are really, really good. So I think if anything, my 19th ranking on Grayson, I'm curious if he's even in your top 20. I think that's low. I don't think I'm getting much of Grayson Rodriguez this year.
Yeah, I am at 21, and I've almost moved him up. He got bumped out for Yamamoto. He would have been 20 before Yamamoto. Let's put it
interesting.
That way. I could see myself moving him up. That's why it's just so tough, because I want to move him up, but then do I really justify moving these other guys down? They all feel so similar, so it's kind of what are you looking for at this point in your draft? Did you punt pitching? Are you looking for an SP2? What kind of things are you looking for as you draft? And maybe you need strikeouts and you want an upside for your SP2, so you go Grayson Rodriguez over a Webb or Gilbert. Okay, that makes total sense. I get it. You want to go for the ceiling play. Otherwise, it's kind of tricky. So I'm at 21, but again, a lot of time, December 21st, for that to change. Yeah.
And there's no battle there. Putting Grayson at 19 and 21, we basically have the same.
Yeah, when this is section of the pitchers. I'm going to ask you a few guys that neither one of us have afterwards that I wanted to see where you have them. Yeah. My 19th, we can kind of go through this pretty quick now. My 19th is Gilbert. We talked about him. Love Gilbert. I have no problem with Logan Gilbert. I agree with most things you said. It's one of those I just kind of want to see it a little more. I trust what I saw these other, but it's grasping at straws. So give me Gilbert there. And I'll say my number 20 is Framber. The second half scared me a ton, and I'm a huge Framber guy. That second half scared me a lot.
Yep. I get it. It's kind of, I don't know, and maybe I move Framber down a little bit talking through this with you.
Because he's another accumulator guy. That's the only thing. I love Framber. So that just
You were all over him last year.
100%. Yeah, so that's all. But yeah.
All right.
I want to ask you
some differences, some big differences, a few consistency at the top.
I kept my support for Freddie, unlike some people, but we're good there. Curious, where do you have Tarik Skubal? Because that'll be asked. That'll be asked. The fact we don't have him in the top 20. So I just want to flat out ask now, where do you have him? Because I have him at 22.
So Tarik Skubal, where the hell do I have him? I have him at 27.
I'm not going to argue, because he's been one of the hardest guys for me to rank.
Tarik Skubal is the 12th starting pitcher off the board, at least in Gladiators, right around there. And neither of us have him in the top 20. I can probably speak for you, but it's just the injury. We're basically banking on what we saw in 2 months from him.
Yep. So there's that.
He's basically Tyler Glass now.
He is, except we've seen Glasnow throw more innings. And we've seen even in Glasnow's shorter seasons still be that kind of electric guy, where we have not seen that from Skubal yet. And then another thing from Skubal, Torres Takes tweeted it out. The matchups that Skubal had since he returned, pretty nice, pretty cupcakey. So let's put it that way as well. He had a nice schedule to finish out the season. So that was pretty big.
He had that one Giants hangover game. I remember when they played a morning game in Detroit on their way back from the West Coast.
Yep. And then after that, it's pretty kind of, you can mix and match a ton of guys. Do you have anybody that stands out you're curious? So where do you have Cole Reagans for fun?
Reagans, I've got 35th.
I have 32.
The one guy that, Skubal's the obvious one that neither of us mentioned that's in the top 20. The other one is 80, at least what I've got, ADP 21, is Yuri Perez.
I have him 23.
You obviously thought about him, putting him in. I've got him at 28, so not too far off either. Yeah. So.
And my stuff's free. People can read this. So it's I go Skubal, Perez, Eflin, Ryan, Bybee, Bradish, Miller. That's my up to 28. So you play a lot of those guys ahead of them type thing. It's probably a lot of mix and matching.
Yeah, I'll just list out. Let's see. So after Senga, I've got Joe Ryan, Zach Eflin, Bobby Miller, Merrill Kelly, Max Fried, Kyle Bradish.
So yeah, a lot of the guys, same guys, just we mixed and matched them. It's kind of like we started out with. A lot of this stuff is so interchangeable at a certain point. And it gets even harder to rank these dudes farther down. Like, at least you have a spreadsheet that kind of spits things out for you. I'm literally sitting here just like, I'll copy and paste like chunks of pictures and keep moving things around. Like
moving around.
It's just, that's why people, I just laugh. I'm like, oh, this is so annoying. But it's necessary for me and for other reasons. So any final thoughts on the top 20 SP? Wasn't as dramatic as expected, but it was fun. There's a few moments there. But,
yeah, we had a few disagreements. Glasnow and I guess Freddie and Lopez.
Yeah.
But I still like Freddie. I feel like I'm turning my back on Freddie and you're sticking with him.
It feels like you did, honestly.
It's not good.
No, it's not. And your Pablo take, like I don't know if I could have him that high, but I understand where you're coming from. Like it's there. It's just it's a tricky one, but I get it. I get it for sure.
So I'll post this. One of the questions in the chat was, are we gonna post this somewhere? I will post this out either from the podcast account, which has had some issues lately. I don't know. Maybe just for mine. And so this will be out for everyone to check it out and debate. If there are questions on our rankings, we won't just say listen to the podcast. We do recommend you do, but we'll defend ourselves on there as well.
Okay, Yamamoto details real quick. This came in as a pair of opt outs. It's pending a physical, but 12 years, $325 million, which includes a $50 million signing bonus.
12 years, you said?
Yes. That's why I said he'll be 37. Almost 38. Wow. 12 years, $325, $50 million signing bonus, no deferred money, an additional $50.6 million posting fee.
Yep.
$50.6 million. So in theory, it's almost a $400 million deal,
which is almost Ohtani money.
Yeah,
without deferrals, that's almost Ohtani money.
Ay.
That's insane. That's interesting. That's
just, it's hard to just wrap your head around that. But let's do a couple listener questions here before we head on out from this bad boy. Thomas Travato did ask, "What would it take for Logan Gilbert to crack your top 20?" Nothing, because he already
took.
Yes, he's already there, my friend. Then our buddy Colin My Shot has another good chart for us here. In 2023, only 15 starting pitchers throwing 10 or more games started, averaged 6 innings or more per start. 12 of those 15 pitchers that accomplished that finished in the top 30 by Razzball Player Rater. Pitching deep into games seems important for both Ks and wins. Do you think this is a skill that can be counted on, or does it tend to regress to a stable league average?
Good question. I have not done the research, but I will now. I'll check that out. I would think it's a skill. I mean, the ability to not only have a repertoire that works the third time through the order, have the ability to not be Blake Snell and have efficient pitch counts and throw strikes. That's a skill. We know that. So the two main building blocks of being able to pitch deeper into games are skills. So thus, I do think I think those are skills, but I'll run the numbers as well. That's a good stat to look at.
If you look at the list, here, these are guys that have proven it. So that's kind of a topic we've talked about throughout the show. It's Cole, Alcantara, Webb, Framber, Woodruff, Pablo Lopez, Wheeler, Kirby, Burns, Nola, Gallen, Keller, Verlander, Bieber, Bassett. Almost, I'd say 10 of those guys at least were on our list. Like those are proven dudes. So. Yep. And the other thing I'll mention, talked about Otuma the other day. Read his starting pitchers or a balloons article. It kind of talks about that kind of mindset to have when you're drafting guys. It doesn't break it down like Ryan will probably look into, but it gives you a nice idea about skill sets and guys that have done it and the stretching out process and that kind of stuff. Like Glasnow is a broken popped balloon. That's a tough argument. But like your Coles and even maybe your Pablo Lopez and some guys. Wheeler's a great example. Those are like a proven balloon. If you want to know what that all means, go read the article. It's for free on Tuma's stuff. It's really, really, it was kind of eye-opening. A lot of it has to do with age. I'm going to say that much. A lot of age things there. Yep. All right. That'll do it, my friends. Another episode in the books. We'll have two episodes for y'all next week, but I'll say Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, back at you, my friend, and to all the listeners as well. Enjoy the weekend, Christmas, whatever we all celebrate. Just enjoy the time, and we'll be back. Yeah, we'll be back Tuesday. And I'm going to Virginia next Wednesday, but we'll get a couple shows out for you guys next week. So
yeah, we'll take care of you. We'll get you guys covered to the new year, and then we'll start getting you ready for 2024 in a big way. So just
We've got big plans. Previews and Bloom boards are coming in full swing this year. I always start them back up like in earnest right after New Year's. So we'll have plenty to talk. I'm really looking forward to we kind of made it through not the like doldrums, but like, cause I mean, we live this stuff, but it's going to be fun once we get back in January. Like, baseball will be at the top of mind. Football will be in the rear view, and it's just a fun time.
Yep. It's going to be great. So make sure y'all follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Entrick. Until next time, this is Bubba the Bloom, episode 93. Catch y'all later.